The room was light, but I don't know the source. It seemed to be coming out of the walls, but I couldn't see any light fixtures that I could recognize, so I don't know the central point or source it was coming from. This description has been repeated in other UFO cases, that the source of light seems to be coming from the ceiling and walls, as though the entire surface is illuminated. L. This room has a bar bolted into the wall, that is similar to the stainless steel type for the handicap to hold on. Not a bar, but a pole that runs circular around the wall. It's fine textured as stainless steel is, but it's not cold. The walls are curved, like in a big circular room. I say big, but it's not really big. It's not massive. If you're lying down and you look up, there is something like an observation room where people or beings could look down, and observe what was going on within the confines of this examining room. I want to say it's glass. It's clear, but probably not glass. But something that would probably prevent germs from the custodians, 129, spreading, or extra things being exposed to whatever was happening. Almost like an observation deck you would see in a hospital. But in hospitals I think observation decks are set further back. This is not like that. It's like glass windows, and behind it you can see people standing and observing. But not like in a hospital that you would see on TV with the students standing around and observing. It's different from that. D. Are the beings behind the glass the same type as the ones in the room? Yes. Are there any other objects in the room that you can see? L. I want to say. It's not a computer like we think of, with a typewriter and screen. It's not like that at all. There are monitors, I guess, but not like our monitors. These are more or less built into the wall to do whatever they do. They appear to be made of that same metal, like stainless steel, and have panels and buttons beside them. There are different workstations around the walls of the room. One workstation has a very complex looking microscope, and whatever they are working on is shown on the screen above it. And another workstation has a pair of very delicately balanced calipers and cantilevers for handling and dealing with extremely small objects that are too small to use your fingers. A miniaturized tools type of thing. There are colored lights on the panels. And there are sounds that come from them. D. Like machine sounds? L. No, not like our machines. The frequency of the sound is higher. There must be some correlation between the sounds you hear and the different light patterns that appear, but I don't know what. D. Are there any other sounds? L. Sounds? Yeah. You know what that is? That must be the sound. I said the sounds in this examination room were high frequency sounds, like a dentist's drill. That other sound, although this wouldn't make sense, but I'm going to say it anyway. That buzzing, skill saw sound, this is, 130, hidden information in dreams, real. That must have something to do with the engines or something. That's putting this whole thing in Earth terms. D. But the other computer type machines are making a different kind of sound? L. Oh, yeah. That sound is much more melodic. It's not changing, but it is more melodic. It's not like a skill saw sound. D. All right. I'm going to ask you now, how did you get there? You can just watch. You don't have to experience it again. How did you come to be in that room? L. I'll tell you what I want to say. Take it with a grain of salt. This is the only thing that seems to make sense. What came to mind was that I had to be teleported or lifted up through some method. Not by a spacecraft coming into my bedroom and doing whatever. No, again I'm going back to a light beam effect. But I don't even know about that, because it's as if I have two minds working here right now. D. Just say whatever comes to mind. Don't worry about analyzing it. L. Big sigh, it was like I was beamed on board through whatever means. But the physical body didn't break down like in Star Trek. It must have been some kind of light beam effect, I guess, because I'm thinking about physical realities, like the structures of your house, and thinking about returning. It must be that they encompass your body with this physical light beam, and maybe break apart its molecular structure, so it could be encompassed. So it wasn't a solidness. And then the light beam doing whatever it does to the solidness of the body, and taking the whole molecular structure via the light beam. D. Don't worry about it making sense. This is what comes to mind, and that is what we're working with. L. This is what comes to mind, yes. D. And the whole time you were there you only saw these beings that looked alike? L. I want to say there were two groups of people or beings. The second group were the experimenters. The first group, the custodians, 131, were the ones with the blue uniforms. They were more bug-like. They weren't the same body size as the others. They didn't have chests. They were more long and thin, and more flattened. And their appendages were longer. D. What do you mean, bug-like? L. They weren't the same. Their eyes were bulging, and located on the sides of their head. The head was predominantly eyes, bug-like. I don't remember seeing a nose or a mouth, but I assume they had to have a mouth. And they didn't have a chest. You know, these other guys have chests, like we have a chest, with a bone structure. They were more like a big kind of, I want to say praying, mantis or walking stick in terms of structure. But large like a person of our size. And frail, but I was thinking, they couldn't be as frail as a praying mantis kind of frail. It was a drab-looking, insect-looking, type of being, with really long gangly-like arms. Not human-like in any way, shape or form. D. I was trying to get more description. Were their heads also bald? L. No, they were different. They were more like a fly. Blacky, browny, straight and brittle hairs, but not a lot of hair. Like a fly has hair on its legs. Brittle hair that stands up stiff, not soft hair. You know, with those weird eyes that are baldy like you'd see in the movies, and appendages that hang. This description fit the being that Phil saw on a spaceship in my book Keepers of the Garden. This type has also been seen by other abductees. A similar type is reported by Beverly in Chapter 5. L. These people, they're not people, don't even seem to be, dot. Evolved. I can't say what I mean. They don't seem to be intelligent. They seem to be more bug-like. Drones, that's a good word. A drone. D. When did you see them? 132, hidden information in dreams. L. They were involved in the beginning, I guess. I think they're the ones that had that smell. They must be. They must be some lower life form or something that's used for a certain purpose. These creatures were in the beginning of the experience, that I didn't recall before. Like you'll be telling someone a story, and then something that happened in the beginning pops in. Well, they were in the beginning. I want to say they were like recruiters. Chuckle D. Ah, that's an interesting word. L. And they took me through a hall and into the room with the smell. She wrinkled her nose again. Right now I get a flash of their quarters, I guess. I don't know why I was there. D. What did it look like? L. I can tell you. If the smell would just. It was bothering her again. I gave instructions that the smell would not physically bother her while she talked about the creatures. L. It just focuses your attention. Not that I can even smell it now. It's dark there. It's not like the other room. This one is darkened. Damp. But how can it be damp? I don't understand it. But that's the feeling I get. I see. I guess it's clothing. Suits of some sort. They're on the floor, just like fireman suits. You know, when we used to go to the firehouse as a kid, and the guys would have their boots and everything all in a pile. All these clothes are piled, but there are no real boots. The clothes are some kind of cloth, but more like a petroleum-made product material. D. Is that the only thing you can see in that room? L. Yeah. I'm sitting in there for a while. D. Did you have your clothes on while you were in there? L. Yeah, I did. I have my night clothes on. Huh. I had on my nightshirt to sleep, and it says on it, you can't sink a rainbow. That's funny. Chuckle D. Then it's the same one you had on when you went to bed. The custodians, 133. All right. Let's go back to the other experience. At least that one being was nice afterwards. Did he do or communicate anything to you? L. Yeah, there was a stroking of the arm, a touching of the face, and eye contact. I guess for a calming effect. I hear, I could feel the sounds. No. He's not talking. When he's calming me, he wasn't even transmitting the kind of weird verbalization that was going on before. D, was that all that happened there? She sighed deeply. I think it was enough though. Chuckle. L, yes, I think. I don't want to remember any more. D, that's perfectly all right. But then you were brought back? L, yeah. How was I brought back? Pause. Now there's communication between us, as I'm standing there in their white room, and I have my nightshirt on again. D, what is the communication? L, I don't know. I can see myself, and I'm pleased, and I feel all right now. I can't remember. D, was it important? L, I don't know. I hope it wasn't. D, if it was important, D or subconscious will remember it anyway. L, it was more or less. I'm going to say it. I don't know if it's true or accurate. A farewell greeting and, yes, we'll see each other again. That kind of a deal. D, all right. But then how were you brought back to your room? L, I'm walking with a nice man through a hall. And through the stench. And now we're outside the stench room. Pause. I can't remember. I can't even see it. But it has to be that same kind of pin source, whatever it is. D, do you think that's how you got back to your room? L, I don't know how else. Chuckle. I'm sure the vehicle didn't land on my house. D, laugh. Do you remember seeing the outside of the craft? L, I could see it now. It was, not round, it was more, elliptical shaped. Hand motions, this way would be, 134, hidden information in dreams, elliptical. The underneath would be more rounded. D, but then you ended up back in your room, and everything was fine. Wasn't it? She gave a positive exclamation. It wasn't so bad then. It was all over with. How do you feel about it? L, now? I didn't like that experience when I was viewing it. And I don't like thinking about it. But right now I sound angry, don't I? D, a little bit. L, but as I pull myself back and look, I wasn't after it was over with. How do I feel about it? Do you really want to know? I think I made it all up. D, laugh, but does it bother you that it might have happened? L, does it bother me? Thoughtfully, number D, I was thinking that might be the reasons didn't let you remember, because they didn't want it to bother you at the time and afterwards. L, that's true. I then brought Leanne forward and oriented her. Before waking her up, I gave many suggestions for well-being so this experience wouldn't bother her. After the session, we got a drink and relaxed for a bit before I gave her a tablet and marker and asked her to draw what she remembered. She apologized that she was no artist. The custodians, 135, --, xx, drawing of the instrument panel, microscope and calipers, by Leanne. Many other subjects saw similar scenes, control panels and screens mounted on curved walls, instruments with handles to manipulate small objects, microscopes that projected cells, etc. onto the larger screens. Often star maps were seen on the screens. 136, hidden information in dreams, insignia, craft, drawing by Leanne of the insignia and craft. The custodians, 137, Leanne remarked sarcastically, what happened to Ashtar? I would rather be traveling with Ashtar. We laughed, and I knew she would be all right, even though the experience was not what she had expected. She then spent quite a bit of time trying to define the awful smell that still lingered in her memory. That seemed to bother her, and she was determined to find some kind of comparison. That smell. Not like anything I ever smelled. You know, how rotten eggs smell. It wasn't like that, because that is like a sulfur smell. It wasn't organic. You know how things that are organic may smell really terrible when they rot. It was a different smell. This smell is like a burning. Like a metal. We used to live in Chicago right by the steel mills. And it reminds me of the smell when they burned metal. It was like the smell of zinc. How does zinc smell when it burns? I had no idea. I don't know. But it was like a burnt smell? Not burnt. It was like a rotten, sour smell, but like it has to do with a metal. I want to say zinc. That keeps popping in. Yet I don't know how zinc would smell if you burned it. Or like slate. How would slate smell if you burned it? But it wasn't like a body decomposing. It wasn't like garbage or anything organic. It wasn't sulfur. I keep wanting to say it was more metallic instead of organic. If it's any consolation, other people have smelled strange things, and they also have difficulty describing it. An offensive smell was reported by the first case I ever investigated. The woman, Christine, became almost physically ill when she first entered a craft. She was overwhelmed by a smell that she found difficult to describe. The closest she could come was that it reminded her of something electrical burning, like a burned-out engine. She did not think it was coming from the beings themselves, but instead from a room where the power supply was located. When she asked about the power source, they told her she would not understand unless she had a knowledge of electromagnetics and crystallized structures. There was no visible way to open the door that led to that room. 138, hidden information in dreams, but she saw the beings pass their hands over certain controls, and doors would open and things would move. There, of course, is no way of knowing if the craft these two women saw were the same type, but it is an oddity that they both described a disturbing smell. Leanne explained her difficulty and reluctance to describe events to me in the beginning of the session, when she was experiencing the physical examination. It was like I didn't want to get involved. I'd see a glimpse of it or know what was happening. It's like this other side of me was saying, "You don't want to do that. You're not going to recall anymore." At one point it was like, "Oh, take me out of here." She chuckled. I explained, "Your subconscious safety factor will do that if it thinks you're not ready to look at it." It was important to note that Leanne went into the session expecting a totally different experience, and that gave it more validity. If she was going to fantasize, she would have been on the ship with the blonde, blue-eyed Ashtar. She would not have fantasized something so unpleasant. I saw Leanne again a few days later before she returned home to Florida. I wrote down most of our conversation later while it was still fresh in my mind. She said she had spent the time puzzling over the session. It was as though two parts of her brain were battling each other. The first thing she said was that she wanted to apologize to me. I was surprised. What could she possibly have to apologize for? She said she was apologizing for telling me all those lies and making up that weird story. I knew better, but I let her talk. Then she said the other part of herself wanted to know why she made up such a perverse story. She was expecting a beautiful experience. If not a religious one, at least an intellectual one. She was reasoning that this meant she was a perverse and sick person, in order for her to lie like that and make up such disgusting things. This battling between herself went on for 2 days. But she now felt better. She had come to the conclusion that no, she was not perverse and no, she was not sick. She knew, she was normal. But the question still prevailed, where did it, the custodians, 139, come from? What did it mean? Was it real? I told her she had been expecting to fantasize, and have an enjoyable experience. The real story had been a shock to her. In order for her to fantasize a story that was admittedly perverse and sick, she should have gotten some enjoyment or excitement from the perversion. Instead, she felt only disgust and repulsion. To me, this added validity and dispelled the fantasy theory. The idea did occur to her later about the possibility that something may have been done to her son also. This thought made her feel physically ill in the pit of her stomach. As though, what kind of a mother am I if I couldn't protect my son? And, what kind of creatures would want to hurt a child? She also wondered about his psyche and any trauma that may have been done to his subconscious. We discussed this at length. I had suspected her son may have been involved because of the other cases I had investigated. I did not mention the possibility to her because I didn't want to trouble her. She came to the conclusion by herself. The important thing was that her son did not seem to have any conscious memories of this sort of thing, and it was better left that way. About a month later, she called me from Florida and spent almost an hour discussing all of this. She was still having trouble dealing with it and putting it in its place. The only person she told about the experience was a psychologist friend, who reassured her she was normal, and this was merely a fantasy. When Leanne asked why it was so unpleasant, the woman explained it was because of her strict Catholic upbringing, and the idea had undoubtedly been embedded in her that sex was dirty. I thought that was an interesting explanation, because the incident did not necessarily focus on her sexual parts. Of course, Leanne did not accept the explanation. Leanne mentioned another unusual after effect. One day when she was downtown, she was looking at a large white building with smoked windows, common to that area of Florida, because of the heat. As she looked up at it, the image of the white room with the observation window came into her mind. And she once again thought about the beings up there watching her. Then she told herself that was crazy. When she looked at the building, 140, hidden information in dreams, again, she saw there were only people on the other side of the window doing exercises. I thought she would begin to put the experience into place and deal with it. It was just such a strange and new idea. She is an intelligent and very stable person, and should be able to handle this with no problems. But she could not yet bring herself to listen to the tape, similar to other people I have worked with. I told her this was common and it too would pass. Leanne called again about a week later, late at night. The first thing she said was, "Tell me the truth. Did that really happen to me?" This was a difficult question. It would have to be answered carefully so as to not have any effect on her everyday life. I told her that reality was hard to describe. I spent a long time discussing this with her and telling her it didn't really matter one way or the other if it were real. The important thing was how the memory was affecting her. She finally decided she was not going to read any more about UFOs. She was just going to stick to metaphysical books for a while, because maybe she was thinking about it too much and dwelling on it. I agreed it would be best to get her mind off it. She was leaving for a vacation in Canada, and I thought this would be perfect. She said she had a nightmare the other night and it had also seemed very real. So she convinced herself that if that nightmare, which she was positive was only a dream, seemed so real, then the session was also relating to a dream. Nothing more, nothing less. I told her if this made her feel better, then that was the right way to look at it. This is also the way Phil chose to handle it, just to believe that he had a wild imagination. Her description of the examination showed that the experience is not always related to sexual parts, as in cases involving the removal of sperm and ova. The beings also study waste products, feces and urine, and food before it is fully digested. Maybe this was the reason for hanging upside down, to more easily remove the food from the stomach area. Although it is distasteful to us, it may have genuine scientific value to them to study these things. We cannot judge what we do not fully, the custodians, 141, understand. These unusual cases have continued through the years. By the end of the 1990s, I was traveling to several foreign countries, and investigating cases that had been screened by other investigators and psychologists. I never knew what the case would entail, and by 1997 I had become adept at detecting fantasy cases and those individuals wanting attention. Edith was one of several I worked with in November 1997 in the south of England. During the initial interview, it was established that she had recently suffered from bulimia. Even though she insisted it was no longer a problem, her doctor was alarmed that her blood count was far from normal. I suspected that Edith had psychological problems, and this was further reinforced when she explained the reason for the self-induced bulimia. She was a 40-year-old woman, although she didn't appear that old, with grown children, who had recently married a young man in his 20s. Her relatives seemed to be the basis for many of her problems, including this one. They berated and criticized her by saying, "What can he see in an old woman like you?" She already had a problem with self-esteem that had reflected in her inability to hold a job. These remarks did not help the situation, so she became bulimic in the hope of making herself more attractive. I personally couldn't see the purpose for doing it, because the young man had fallen in love with her the way she was. Why did she feel the need to change? I suspected she needed more psychological counseling than I could give her, especially in the limited time that I would be with her. My main concern was her belief that she had had UFO and alien experiences. Of course, with any work of this type you must take the whole personality into consideration. She explained that she had been having strange dreams that she thought might be related to either aliens or spirit manifestation. Her family was of no help whatsoever, because, 142, hidden information in dreams, they did not have any understanding of the paranormal, and constantly criticized Edith because of her interests. The main experience that she reported occurred during the past year, 1997. She had awakened to see a figure in her room that approached her bed. Then she remembered nothing except the dream that followed. She was lying on a table with figures surrounding her. In a dreamlike stupor she heard them discussing her. They said something about a mistake, and that there was too much blood lost. She determined from this that they had done something to her, that they had taken blood from her, and this was causing her present physical problems. She wanted me to find out during the session, why did they take her blood, and what were they going to do with it. She was convinced that if the experience was real, it was a negative one. When I began the session I didn't know if anything would come out, because I really believed the woman's problems were caused by deeper psychological causes, and the alien connection was merely an excuse to blame them on something outside herself. If this were the case then her subconscious would tell me. When she was in a deep state of trance I directed her to return to her apartment on the night of the event. She was positive of the date because she kept a diary, and the events were recorded in it. She had awakened from sleep because the room was cold. Then she announced apprehensively, "There's something there. It's looking at me. It's watching me. It's by my bed." She described an object about 9 inches across resembling a glowing orange and yellow light, with a large crystal or diamond in its center. Frightened, she was peeking out of the covers at it when she noticed others had entered the room. One was tall and resembled a human with pale skin. He was accompanied by 3 small creatures that resembled white glowing globes. She was not frightened by them, only amused. She thought they were very cute as they touched her arm and face with ice-cold fingers. The tall one was now holding the strange glowing device. A shaft of cold light came from it and was aimed at the center of her forehead. He explained to her that it would, the custodians, 143, not hurt her. It would only make it easier to transport her out of the house. She was told to lie very still as she was encased in a beam of light coming from above, and then began to float off the bed. Somehow they were then outside and floating upward. At this point Edith expressed difficulty breathing, and I had to remove the physical sensations. The next instant she was inside a huge ship, although she did not remember entering it. She was taken to a bright room where the light seemed to emanate from the walls and ceiling. Inside the room were many more creatures which she described as different from the little white soft ones that had accompanied her. They're uglier. But they're not really ugly, just different. They're chunkier, a purpley brown color with bigger fat heads. The little light ones look softer. These have skin that looks rough. She couldn't touch one to find out, because now she was lying on a table and unable to move. They then brought a machine over to the side of the table. She was apprehensive as she saw a light come from the machine and enter her body between the ribs on her left side. She exclaimed, "It hurts, but it doesn't hurt." The tall being mentally communicated with her that it would not hurt her. They were going to repair damage that she had caused to her stomach. She wondered why they were going in between her ribs, instead of through her mouth. He explained that it was easier going through the side. The mood then suddenly changed to one of anxiety when she mentally heard the beings say there was a mistake. There was more damage than anticipated. They were worried, because there was much more bleeding in the stomach. There was more to fix than first thought. She had already lost a great deal of blood, and was getting weak. She heard the words, "You must not damage your body. It is special." They then use the light to seal off the bleeding. I was curious about why she had not noticed the effects of internal bleeding. They said she would have eventually, and it might have been more difficult to repair by that time. They then inserted a white liquid into her arm through something like a needle, but it's not a needle. They explained that they were, 144, hidden information in dreams, putting in better blood cells to counteract the damage. Something to make the blood cells work better.